This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
But dude averages 18 yards after catch.
We get it. When you're passionate about something, you go all in. You live entirely in that world. That's exactly how Graybar is about renewable energy projects.
He's all fourth quarter, such a sleeper.
Join our league of clean energy at Graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Marketers, are you ready to make an impact with audio advertising? People are hungry for authentic connections in a world buzzing all around us. How do you cut through the noise and truly reach your audience? Visit stateofaudio.com to see Audacy State of Audio, the Trends Report. Uncover the secrets to high-impact creative. Learn how AI is revolutionizing the industry. And get ahead of the curve on measurement and audience trends. Don't just stay in the game. Win it. Visit stateofaudio.com and download your free copy.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
Happy Thursday to you, everybody. It is Sports Daily. It is Albrock and Gester, Max Power producing, and we are ready to rock and roll on another basketball game day for the Shockers, a game that's sort of growing in intrigue and importance, at least for me. We'll get into all of that as we make our way through. We will get into the salary cap news. You heard our NFL update there, kind of given the lay of the land. This happened after we left the air yesterday. Another big cap increase. How does that impact everything, especially for the Chiefs? I think it might. So we'll get into that. What the latest is there, what we're hearing, what we're seeing, and what we can honestly just infer from doing a little math. So with that for you, and there's a big hockey game tonight. We haven't really talked about this a lot, but how into this are we and should we be as it's sort of America on the center stage tonight on the ice? We'll get into all of that today. We're going to give away some prizes. We'll give away some HTO for you. We will give away two opportunities to win big prizes in a couple of national contests. So make sure you're staying tuned for your opportunities to learn about those, to win those. That's coming for you today. Our K-State insider, Tim Fitzgerald, comes up in the next hour to talk a little Cats basketball. Tommy, good morning. How are you?
Man, just when we thought that it couldn't get any colder outside, it gets colder.
It did.
I mean, it's wild. When you've got your air temperature at like negative 10 and it feels like, what, negative 25 out there? It's going to make Monday and Tuesday and next week feel that much better when it gets up into the 60s.
I am tempted to play a little winter golf next week just to throw the middle finger to this cold weather.
If you really wanted to throw the middle finger, you would go out and play golf today.
No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't do that at all. But what's the threshold here? Like, what is the cold weather threshold? Like, at what point is it just cold and it doesn't even really matter anymore? And I know it matters for wind chill and hypothermia, and it's very dangerous, and that's all very real, by the way. But, like, for us schmucks, like, if it's 10 degrees outside or 10 below outside, does it really matter? Like, it's just brutal.
Yeah,
no matter
cold
what.
Is cold. I think for me, if I'm gonna go play golf, it all depends on the wind. If it's 40 and calm, that's okay. If it's
no,
50,
it's not. Well, that's gross.
If it's 40 and calm, that's okay. If it's 50 and windy, that may not work. Because it all comes down to the wind and how cold that is.
Although I will say 40 and calm right now would
take it.
Like You'd probably be good without a jacket. It's
like
funny how quickly
Bermuda, or
how quickly we switch. And I, what our meteorologist Jake Dunn put this out yesterday. I may have said this yesterday, but it cracked me up. Like, this is the equivalent of like 40 or 50 degree weather in July. Like, that's how far off the normal we are right now during the day. Like, we're normally in the 50s at this point of the year, but like, this is just crazy. It's crazy. And it's not the first time this happened. I remember when we built our first store out west, the first HDO, is around this time of year. And it was like, right as we were about to break ground on the construction site, we hit that. I don't know if you remember it in 21. We had like 8 days of this kind of weather where we never really came above zero. And they couldn't break ground quite literally because it was too cold. Like, they wouldn't have been able to get a shovel into the ground. So I'm like, oh, well, yeah, this reminds me of that. And at least it's not lasting as long as that one did. But, you know.
We had a power outage here at the Odyssey studios yesterday. And actually, we all stayed on the air, all five of our Odyssey radio stations, backup generator power and all of that. But the rest of our studios were just like pitch black, like dark. Power was out. Nobody could do anything. And as I'm leaving, I'm driving home. I see the Evergy crews outside, and they're working. Like, it's an Evergy issue. They're working on trying to get, you know, things going. I think that finally came back at like 4 o'clock yesterday. But I felt bad for them, like out in the elements. And we were like the only outage in the city. It wasn't like it was a widespread, you know, weather related. Like, something just failed here at the building. And man, those guys were out there. They were working hard in the -5 degree weather yesterday.
Shout out to everybody out there in their vehicle driving around doing that work right now. I grew up on a ranch, and one of the things you had to do in this, like, if you know, you try to prepare before and get all the animals, and for us it was cattle, like where they need to be, but you got to go break all the ice. So like early in the morning, they got to have water, right? And everything's frozen. That's one of the things you have to do, is just drive around and break ice to try and free up the water so that the animals can drink. It's just, it really does. Like, we're a bunch of wimps. I mean, let's be real. Like, we are. Like, we talk on the radio every day. I work for a TV station where reporters get out in it every day, and I don't do that anymore. Certainly did at one point. And like, I don't take for granted the people that are out in the conditions working. Thank you to everybody who does that. Us yesterday, we had one of the stores, the front door was frozen shut. The sliding door wouldn't open. It's like, I'm so sick of it. Everybody's so sick of it. There are some masochists out there that like this, that will tell you that they like cold weather. And I just don't believe them, A. And B, like, why? Like, why do you like this? It's okay to not like hot weather, but that doesn't mean you then have to like this weather. Just don't like hot weather.
And it's okay. Right? If I feel like, again, if you like it to be 40 degrees, okay, like I can get behind that. -20, it's a little bit of a different story. If you like it, number one, you're probably either lying, or number two, I don't want to be friends with you.
Man, it's just crazy. Like, come on now. No, nobody buys into that. We're going to talk to our Royals insider tomorrow. It is nice to see, as we're freezing our butts off, warm Arizona weather. Salvador Perez taking BP yesterday of a battery that is two Kansas City area kids who would have been middle schoolers when Salvador Perez helped the Royals win a World Series. It is baseball season. I see that there is a spring training game today.
Yeah, we actually get games now.
Those images are helping. That's nice to have that, to be able to see that. I'm so excited about the Royals this year. We'll have Jalen Thompson in tomorrow to sort of get the latest on that. But that's all coming as we wrap up the week. And then we're great weather. Look, the weather looks fantastic next week. Like, we're sunny and warm, and I don't think even wind or anything. So maybe this is it. Bear with us there. Max, you're a East Coast guy. This nostalgic for you? Do you hate it like the rest of us?
I hate it.
He hates it.
Listen, I like it when it's 100. I go under a tree. Ah, I'm cooler.
He told me that on Monday when it's 65, he's just going to go and sunbathe.
I'm suing any weatherman that says it's going to be 65 and it doesn't hit it.
Go listen to old Celtics games on the radio and lay under a tree. That sounds pretty good. Man, Max is taking your calls at 869-1240. Thanks for listening to us on KFH, whether it's 97.5 FM, 1240 AM. Thanks for listening to us on the Odyssey app as well. You can leave us voice messages. Believe it or not, you just hit that little microphone. You can leave a message. You send it through. Max can put that out over the air. So if you want to talk about something that we're not talking about yet, or you have some thoughts and you need to make them quickly, just use that. Or you can always leave us your video comments as well. Thanks for watching us on 12 News Connected. Thanks for watching us on YouTube and X today. We're going to get that Facebook reconnected for you here as soon as we can. We will tell you that we are very happy on cold days to have Prairie Fire Coffee in the studios and to keep us warm. And we appreciate their support of the show. When we come back, let's talk a little college hoops. We got a few things, more settling in on the woes of KU, more on the Shockers' opportunity tonight. Again, we'll have Tim Fitzgerald in later. So we'll hit those two. We're going to talk about this hockey. We're going to talk about this salary cap and what it does to impact the Chiefs. That's all coming today on Sports Daily. It's Albrock. It's Caster. Don't go away.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Alo, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and, for shoppers, buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
The commercials are over.
Yo, I haven't got all day.
869-1240.
Time to get busy.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily. Your legend begins aboard the Disney Destiny, the all-new ship from Disney Cruise Line, sailing November 2025. Log in and listen to KFH on Odyssey for a chance to win a trip for four. To set sail on the Disney Destiny in this national contest, all you need to do is listen for an hour on the Odyssey app. Find out more at kfhradio.com. Thanks for being here, everybody. We're going to talk a little college hoops here. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster. Let's start, Tommy, I think, with the Shockers who play tonight. This game is growing on me as far as the importance of it. Wichita State on a four-game win streak. They had the big overtime win at home against Memphis. Florida Atlantic, to me, with an extra day sort of rest, you know, played Sunday and then to a Thursday, an opportunity to go up and get a team that is ahead of you in the standings, that continues the momentum that has been building, if we're being honest. I it's kind of starting to feel important. And I think each game in which they'd be able to extend this win streak would probably be equally important. But this is another nice opportunity for the Shockers to go build on what they've been building the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, the interesting thing about Florida Atlantic is that, you know, while this isn't the Owls team that, you know, everybody paid attention to a couple of years ago when they made those deep tournament runs and all of that, they shoot the ball pretty well. They put up a lot of points. They are a pretty dynamic offensive team, and they have been all season long. They're one of the best teams in college basketball as far as points per game. And so that's going to be a challenge defensively for Wichita State, you know, to make sure that they're doing everything that they can to force turnovers, to limit the opportunities that FAU has. Wichita State's got to continue to rebound the basketball well and not allow FAU to get those second chance opportunities. So it's going to be a challenge for Wichita State. Look, there's a reason why, you know, Florida Atlantic is, even though, again, not quite at the level that we remember them being when Dusty May was their coach and all of that, that they're still a pretty potent, at least offensive team. You can get them defensively. They're not a good defensive team, and that's where Florida Atlantic struggles. So Wichita State's got to make sure that they take advantage of and make the most of the times they have the basketball. They can't turn it over. They can't give it back to FAU.
It's hard to go win road games in conference play, no matter what the conference is. Even when the Shockers were great playing in the Valley, it's hard. I get it. And FAU, by the analytics, is the third best team in this league. So it's not going to be easy. The things you just said, though, I think are advantageous for the Shockers. The Shockers should always want to play teams that don't play a ton of defense because it'll make things easier on them offensively, because I think the identity of this team needs to, you know, kick it old school for the Shockers. Same sort of thing we saw against Memphis. Like, just play crazy defense, physical, chaotic defense. And you know, if you're playing a good offensive team that doesn't play a lot of defense, I think that works to your advantage. So we'll see if they can get it done. Defense also travels, right? Defense hits the road.
Yeah, and I also wonder, by the way, too, and we haven't really spent a whole lot of time talking about this, but, you know, in the middle of all of this, you know, sort of resurgence from Wichita State and the win streak and all of that, you know, they've had Justin Hill on the bench. I mean, he's been injured. He hasn't played, you know, and that hasn't really been a topic of conversation, at least with us, a whole lot about how, you know, right when he goes down with an injury, the Shockers rattle off four straight. And so I don't know what his status is for tonight. I don't know long term what that looks like for Wichita State, but I have to wonder, like, is there a correlation there? Is there a correlation that, you know, him being injured and not playing, all of a sudden Wichita State's won four in a row?
It's an interesting idea, because it's, I mean, early in the year, had you said that, it'd have been like, you're crazy for saying that, right? Because he looked like such an offensive weapon. That's interesting. I think it allows them perhaps to get into this style they like a little bit better. The last game Hill played was against North Texas, which is a game, the last game that they lost. He was fine in that game. So I don't know what it does. I don't know the answer to that. That's a good question.
I think it does defensively. Yeah, it could potentially go either way. Like, he, you know, when he returns to the lineup again, I don't know if that's tonight or in the future. You know, does that make this team that's already played well better? Or is there another correlation there where I don't want to suggest that him not playing has made them better, but I don't know. That's a really interesting development that they've had this winning streak with him not being able to play.
I think the first thing you said is more likely to be true. I think when you're playing well and a guy like that comes back, he adds to whatever it is. And I say that, again, not knowing anything other than what we see on the floor, right? Like, I don't know the dynamic of that locker room very well. I'm not talking to them before and after games like I used to. But I would say that getting a player of his offensive capabilities back, no matter what it looks like, even if it's to a lesser role, I mean, it can't be a bad thing for the team, I don't think. His minutes probably aren't what they once were. But when we look at a game, and again, Bijan Cortez deserves all the credit in the world for the way he played against Memphis. But I think based on what we've seen over 2 years, it's a dangerous proposition to want to play Bijan Cortez 30 plus minutes every game that they play. So I think
I don't think that's a recipe for long term success.
So if, you know, maybe he finds something and he can, but then Justin Hill also helps there in a game where Xavier Bell gets in foul trouble. You know, that kind of thing. I think it's hard for me to imagine a player of his ability, Hill's, doesn't help this team somehow. Now, is it also possible that through his absence they've figured something out because they've had to? Sure, it is. And now maybe you get the best of both worlds. I will say this, and we've said it a million times this year with this team. I don't recall a time where I've ever, like right now when we're talking, like Kansas's low point, and this may be the low point of the Bill Self era, by the way, which we'll talk about in just a second. There is an absolute and has been energy, effort, all that stuff's getting questioned. Even when the Shockers struggled through the first part of conference play, I never got that vibe from them. Now, did they make a lot of mistakes? Yes, absolutely. But as far as like the want to, never seemed like it was waning for me. Even Kansas State early in the year had that problem, right? I haven't ever gotten that vibe from Wichita State. So I don't know that they struggled through any of that stuff. I think they're pretty good in that area. They're just now learning how to fit all these pieces together.
I mean, that is a compliment and a testament to Paul Mills, right? Because I think that it would be really, really, really easy when you start off conference play 1-7, when you lose to UMKC, you know, when you are struggling to beat a team like Friends on your home court, when you are getting blown out by Florida by, 40-some points early in the season, it would be really easy to just completely lose faith and lose hope and all of that. And the fact that they've been able to now rattle off these wins and, in essence, turn their season around, maybe not to the level that everybody expected or wanted them to. But I mean, keep in mind, they're 5-7 in conference play. They're 15-10 overall. They have basically pulled themselves up by their bootstraps when the season was sort of at the brink a little bit. And, you know, I think everybody was basically leaving them for dead. And I think that's a testament to, you know, the way that he's been able to keep this team together. You contrast that with where Kansas is right now. And I don't think there's a whole lot of optimism that they've got the makeup to be able to pull themselves up by the bootstraps. Like, that just doesn't really seem like it's in their makeup, where we've seen that from actually both Wichita State and Kansas State this season, pulling themselves up by their bootstraps and you know, turning things around.
And that also, to that point, and we can use that as a transition, and I agree, all the credit in the world to the coaches at Wichita State, because there's a lot of noise there this year that they have seemed to work through, which I love. It should serve as a reminder, and what Kansas State went through early in the year should serve as a reminder, as we'll just transition into KU, that there is still a lot of basketball this season, right? Like, if you're a Kansas fan right now, and I do, by the way, for the record, and maybe we start here, I think this is rock bottom of the Bill Self era. Now, when I say that, I am not saying that a loss to BYU on the road in February is worse than an early exit game of an NCAA tournament. No, it's not what I'm trying to say. What I'm saying is the point of the, and this is a compliment to Bill Self, but this probably is the low point when you factor in the way last year felt into this year, the expectations, where they are, the effort at which they're playing. This is probably the lowest point we've seen a Bill Self program in 25 years, which is remarkable, by the way. The great thing about what Kansas has been able to do is the height of their floor. There's nothing else like it. There isn't. I told people in the Big 12, I used to tell people all the time, that Big 12 streak was one of the craziest things I'd ever seen in sports. In college athletics, where there is roster turnover as much as there is, to have won all those Big 12 titles in a row was one of the craziest things I've ever seen in sports. But they just don't ever have to deal with the things literally every other program in the country deals with, which is stuff like this year. Real people stuff, right? Like, this locker room emotionally and everything, like, it's not working. And they're having to deal. They never have to deal with that kind of stuff. That's what's made it so incredible. And when I say things like KU fans are spoiled, that's what I mean. Like, you never have to go through this stuff that everybody else has to go through all the time. All that being said, there's still almost a month before we get to the NCAA tournament for Kansas to figure it out to some level, just like K-State has this year, just like Wichita State, I think, has. Like, to figure that part of it out. That's what makes the Kansas thing so difficult right now. It doesn't seem like there's any way they could do that, but there's a long time for them to be able to try and get back to the level of a team that has some of the best wins of any team this year in the country. Wins over Duke and Michigan State on neutral, those kinds of wins.
I may actually be a little bit more pessimistic than most. And I feel badly about that because, again, Bill Self is one of the greatest coaches to ever do it, and I'm doubting his ability to rally the troops. I'm doubting the ability of these players to be able to rally themselves, for the pride of what's on the front of their jersey, all of that. And the reason I think why I'm pessimistic is because Bill Self himself sounds pretty pessimistic. I mean, you know, saying things like they need to get away from each other and saying things. I mean, I think the most shocking thing about all of this, well, I don't know if it's the most shocking thing. There are a lot of shocking things about all of this. But one of them is that prior to the Utah game, Bill Self said that he was tired of talking about it. And he told his team, I'm tired of talking about it. We've talked about it to death. Now we need to go out and do it. Like, go out and do it. Go out and make it happen. And they went 0-2 on that road trip. They didn't go out and do it. And he challenged his team prior to the BYU game. The time for talking is done. The time for action is now. We have strategized. We have plotted. We have tried to figure out a way to come back from this. The time for talking is done. The time for action is now. And they immediately go out and lose by 34 points. And, you know, so like that, I think that's the most, for me at least, the reason why I'm probably most pessimistic right now is just because even in the midst of these challenges, when it's like, man, we've got nothing else to do but just go out there and try to turn it around, and then they just get blown out by 34 and they look like they don't care.
I think that sound, if you actually listen to it versus read it, reading it is a little bit deceptive. He didn't seem like exasperated or anything to me. He was like, there's nothing else we're going to be able to say. Like, and the point of it was, like, at some point we got to, and before he said, we got to get away from each other, and that whole part of it, which was the very last thing he said after the game, he said, there are points in a season where things happen that bring you together. Like, the teams do this a lot. Like, you have those moments where you can galvanize based on all the noise outside. So, like, all the things we're talking about and everybody else is talking about, a lot of times that will make a team come together. And his point then was, we got to get away from each other and at some point look in the mirror and say, whatever that is, we got to just go do it. And so, I do think because of that and the way that read, some people feel like Self maybe has just thrown his hands up in the air with this team. I don't think that at all. If that was the case, he wouldn't be so beholden to rotations and things where he's trying to do everything he can still to win games. I mean, there's a chance we see the worst KU regular season ever, and it's a 20-win season in which they're like a 5 or 6 seed. That is just stupid to say that's the worst season in 2.5 decades. Like, that's crazy. So what can they do now, and will they do it? I'm with you. I think the chances are low, but they're not non-existent. And it's interesting, as we talk a lot about Wichita State and this place they have reached now in a 4-game win streak, when we talk about K-State and how it is quite literally a different team on the floor right now, this in the calendar year of 2025 than it was in the calendar year of 2024, if those teams can do it, KU can do it. It's the will they, and maybe it's just simply the order of which it's happened. Maybe that's all it is. But yeah, I mean, they can't. There's enough time for them to, for sure.
I think you've got to be really, really careful, though, that the game this weekend and even potentially the game early next week, they get Oklahoma State at home on Saturday. Then they go on the road at Houston next week or at Colorado next week. I think you got to be really, really careful that if KU wins both of those games, that you don't look at that and you're like, man, they're back. Like, that could easily be a mirage. That can easily be fool's gold. Because Oklahoma State is bad. Colorado is bad. And by the way, they just about lost to Colorado. Like, Colorado challenged them.
I don't think that's fool's gold at this point.
So here's the thing. I think that we are, and this might be like worst case scenario type thing, glass half empty. I think KU is on a collision course to entering the NCAA tournament with a 19-14 record. I think we're on a collision course to that. And maybe even an 18.
And a 7 seed?
Yeah.
And a 7 seed? Yeah, because I mean, a 7 seed perks my ears up a little bit. Because 7 seed might get them back here to Wichita.
I lined out this scenario yesterday. I think it's like legitimate, a possibility. They win this weekend at home against Oklahoma State. They could lose on the road in Boulder, in Colorado, early next week. I don't think they will, but they could. But then you've got three ranked teams to end the regular season in Houston, Texas Tech, and Arizona. Like those three, like they could lose all three of those. They could get bounced in the opening round of the Big 12 tournament. And then at that point, you're looking at, you know, an 18 or 19 win team getting into the NCAA tournament. I just want to prepare everybody for that because I think we're on a collision course for that to happen.
I think what we've seen recently would tell you that that's almost likely. Now, do I think that's going to happen? I don't. I think they'll get to 20. It's a tricky one. It really is a tricky one because it appears the effort is not there, and I don't ever know what to do with that. Like, I think that's difficult to try to, when we're trying to predict things, I think that's the part that gets the most unpredictable. Like, we can predict that KU's not a great offensive team, can be an elite, elite defensive team, and we can predict those things. What we can't predict is if guys care enough. I don't know how you do. All right. Salary cap goes up a $22 to $26 million, another huge jump. For the Chiefs, I think this makes a difference for sure. I think it may help them keep one more free agent. I don't know how it wouldn't. They're not going to not spend their money. I don't think they're in a good position to not spend their money. So they're going to spend it, and maybe it helps them keep a free agent they didn't think they were going to be able to. So I think this is great news if you're a Chiefs fan. You know, does it help them go sign Ronnie Stanley? Maybe. I mean, it also could help you there, right? I think it's more likely, Tommy, to help them keep somebody they already have that may have been gone. But I also think there is a chance with a little restructuring and things, it could be the thing that allows them to go and get their big-time free agent left tackle if that's what they decide they want to do. So not bad news that the cap's going up. You know, thanks, Taylor Swift. That's the joke that's been out there, which is pretty fun. But yeah, it's up for a second straight year.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a rinse and repeat, you know, for not even just necessarily the increase of the salary cap, but rinse and repeat in the offseason where Kansas City is going to approach different players, and it's usually Patrick Mahomes, to restructure his contract. And I would imagine that that will happen again, you know, to an extent. Like, a lot of times that happens with guys like Mahomes and Jones and Kelsey and, you know, that sort of thing. Because they do have needs. They do have goals in this offseason. And with the salary cap going up, that does help their flexibility a little bit. They're going to need some additional help from other players to be able to get done what I think Brett Veach wants to get done this offseason.
So it gets interesting with it. Like, if we looked at the Chiefs free agents and I gave you two options, would you rather see them use that money? Let's say they could use it to go get Ronnie Stanley. Or would you rather see them use that money? And I'm going to take Trey Smith out of this because I think his is still probably too hard to figure out. So we'll do it this way. You can either use that money to go get Ronnie Stanley, or you can use that money to go re-sign four or five of the group of, you know, Justin Reed, Nick Bolton, DeAndre Hopkins, Hollywood Brown, Charles Omenihu. You can throw Kareem Hunt in there if you want to. You know, that group of people, which way do you think would be more beneficial? The collection to bring a lot of it back, or to go try and throw it all at solving left tackle?
I would like to see them go all in to solve left tackle permanently. You mentioned Ronnie Stanley. I would love to have Ronnie Stanley be the starting left tackle for the Chiefs. I don't think it's going to happen. The projections right now, and this came out a couple of days ago, that it's from the site, the 33rd team, and they project contracts and project, you know, offseason free agency type deals. They're projecting that Ronnie Stanley will receive a 2-year, $42 million mega contract in free agency.
They'd be there.
I get it, but I don't think that that's going to be I don't think that's going to be the path that Brett Veach is going to go. I would love to see that happen. I don't think that's going to be the path he's going to go.
If they can get Ronnie Stanley on a two-year deal for $20 million a year, I mean, where else would he rather go play? And why would Baltimore not? I mean, I'd be concerned that Baltimore wouldn't be willing to do that deal, quite frankly. And here's the always the hard part with offensive linemen for me. Most of the time, I don't know enough about these players. I have not paid particularly close attention to Ronnie Stanley, right? I know them when they play for the teams I watch a lot of, right? Like, I know the Chiefs had a real problem at left tackle last year because we watched all their games. I wasn't watching Ronnie Stanley when I watched the Ravens, right? So I assume he's where everybody says he is, and he certainly would be better than what they've had. But on a two-year deal, I would be fine backing the Brinks truck up and taking that swing because he's going to be better than what they've had, no matter how good he is or bad. It would be, you know, at worst case, probably similar to the Orlando Brown situation where he's good, he's fine, he's not the best, but he's fine. And fine right now is a large step ahead of where they've been.
Well, I mean, Ronnie Stanley is the best available, so I think you would put
That's
him above fine.
Well, but that don't. It's not a knock on Ronnie Stanley. I'm saying, like, what's the floor of making that kind of a big financial commitment? I think fine is the floor.
Yeah.
Right. With the ceiling certainly being much higher than that.
Yeah, and look, like I said, I would love to see them go all in on left tackle. You know, I don't know. I'm not yet convinced that that's the direction that they're going to go from a salary perspective. I just have a hard time thinking that Brett Veach will do that. Now, maybe I'll be wrong because, again, remember, he did go after Orlando Brown and basically paid him, you know, to come in and do that. So he could do that again with Ronnie Stanley. That would probably be, I mean, that would definitely be, I think, a safer signing than the Orlando Brown signing was at the time. You know, it goes back to the conversation yesterday. They could also use their assets to trade up in the draft and maybe take one of these highly touted rookie left tackles. But again, like from my perspective, I said this yesterday, if they do that, if they go that path, they've got to be, I think, 15 or higher in the draft to be able to get somebody that can be a difference maker at left tackle right away. It's got to be one or the other. It's either they trade up higher into the first round and get their blue chip left tackle of the future, or they go ahead and spend the money to get an established left tackle.
So here's the problem with that. You can't, unfortunately, wait and hope that you can, because let's say you trade up to 15.
Yeah.
They don't know that he's going to be. They have to do that on draft night.
Right.
Right. Based on what's happening in the draft, unless they move up in the top five or whatever it is. Like, they'd have to do that on draft. So
the only benefit is that there are two or three pretty highly touted, highly regarded early to middle first round left tackles that that will be available. So if you don't get one, you could get one of the other. I think that somebody will be available around that time.
So they have to A, like all three of them then.
Right.
And B, you can't say 15 to get those, because that position gets drafted at a premium level all the time. You probably have to go more like top five.
Well, my point is on that, you know, when you go back and you compare, you know, all of the left tackles, and we did this yesterday.
Yeah.
Nobody's really of significance, at least right now, getting drafted later, like after 15 in the first round, that they're now starting left tackle
in
the league.
But that's what I mean. So, like, it's chicken and egg. Like, if you're going to do it in free agency, you don't get the benefit of waiting to see if you can get what you want in the draft. You can't. And so unless you're the top pick.
Then that's why you probably take a swing. Like, you try to take a swing at a Ronnie Stanley or somebody else.
I think so.
And then your backup plan, if you don't get them, if you're not able to make that happen, then you go and try to trade up and make the draft work.
Well, you at least have the conversation with Stanley now or whichever free agent they might like to see where it's at. And then you can quickly pivot from that to, at minimum, using all that money to bringing back two or three of the guys you thought perhaps you would lose. Like, maybe now Aminahue's back on the table and you could bring back Aminahue and Nick Bolton. You know what I mean? And then, you know, at that point, like, but we still are going to have to attack the draft, because I guess what I'm trying to say is you got to spend the money before the draft, one way or the other, right? Before you know what you'll be able to do in the draft, you got to spend that money or you're going to miss out on all these good players. So they'll have to make that decision far before they ever even get the chance to know if they might be able to trade up and go through the evaluation process. We haven't even had the combine yet. So they've got a lot of evaluating still yet to do with the college players. And maybe they just don't think Ronnie Stanley's that good. I'm not saying they do, but you know what I mean? Like, all of that stuff still has to happen. It's just interesting. And again, a good problem to have, that they'll have more money to work with than they thought they would. And with a couple of restructures, they could have a lot more money than they thought they would have to work with. So we're watching that. The other part of the salary cap thing that gets really interesting is, you think about teams like the Bengals, think about teams like the Cowboys, who have let Ja'Marr Chase and Micah Parsons just sit there without their contracts. And it looks even that more stupid, because guess what just happened yesterday? Ja'Marr Chase just got more expensive. Guess what happened with Micah Parsons, who clearly just wants some money? He's got a whole lot more expensive, because if I'm their agent, first call I make whenever they say, let's take Ja'Marr Chase, and they're like, all right, there's the CeeDee Lamb deal. We'll just give you $1 more than the CeeDee Lamb deal. It's like, no. What percentage of the cap is CeeDee Lamb taking? Okay. We're not talking about the money anymore. I want 1% more of the cap than what he's making if we're going to have an equivalent deal. These great players that ownership let drag out just got a whole lot more expensive because the salary cap went up. So, it's not always the right decision to do it. That player may not end up being good, but man, if you do risk it and wait, yikes, it just got harder. Just got harder to do those deals.
Well, and I think that that's a big reason why we're going to see, you know, a free agency period. Like, and I know we're only a couple of weeks away from that. Doesn't it kick off like March 11th or something like that?
Yeah.
It's right around the corner when the new league starts. I think it's going to be fast and furious, because you've got teams that now that they've got a little bit more breathing room with the cap, they are going to be ready to pull the trigger. And I guarantee you that the teams that have waited around with their stars and haven't signed them long term, they're now at a disadvantage. And you're going to have aggressive suitors jumping out and being like, man, we'll take him. Let's go. We've got the cap room now. Let's go. Let's make it happen. And so I think that, yeah, it always is fast and furious, but I think it's going to be even more so this year.
It's March 12th, by the way. I just looked for you.
That's my birthday.
Right there. You were right there on a happy almost birthday.
Yeah. That'd be a great way to celebrate my birthday.
Are you 40 this year?
No, 39. I've got another year to go.
I'm 40 at the end of March. Pour one out for me out there, everybody. So, yes, it is coming soon. And the Chiefs, this is why they do deals like they did with Creed Humphreys. This is why they get out ahead of them. I really do think that. Like, you've got to be confident in the players to do it, but it can save you a lot of money. All right, we'll come back. Hour number two featuring Tim Fitzgerald coming your way in just a bit. Don't go away. More Sports Daily right after this.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
Listen to KFH Radio for your chance at the ultimate trip to Vegas in March. Winning is easy. Just download the free Odyssey app, log in, listen to KFH Radio. Listen each day for a minimum of 1 hour for your daily entry. Includes travel and accommodations for four to Las Vegas, plus $20,000 spending cash. Get all the info with the national contest right there at kfhradio.com. Stay at the Circa Resort and Casino, Las Vegas' premium sports viewing destination, and visit the biggest March hoops party at Stadium Swim. Welcome back into Sports Daily, everybody. Here we go with another hour. You can always leave us your video comments. Those are available to you on X, on YouTube. Thanks for watching us on 12 News Connected. You can call us the old-fashioned way. Max is there taking your calls at 869-1240, or you can leave voice messages through the Odyssey app. Happy to be here with you. I have Tim Fitzgerald later this hour to talk K-State. We've been talking a lot of different things in the first hour. Want to bring up Rick's comment on KU. Amazing how many people say, you know, it's different now because all the teams are paying players. If KU was paying them when no one else was, why did KU players care in the past and not give a darn now? There's a lot to unpack in that question. I would surmise that Rick is implying KU has never paid players before. I think that is, to put it as nicely and politically correct as I can, a reach to think that. Of course they have. Of course, almost all teams in college basketball have in some way, form, or fashion. But it is different now because players leave and enter more freely. KU has always had a loyalty advantage, I think, in its college basketball program. Not that they don't have that now, because they do. Again, 60% of their starting lineup's been there for at least 2 years, some of it 4 or 5. The difference is now you've got to rely a little bit more on these other players. And even if you don't, you're going to have to in the short term if you're KU, because it's more difficult now to keep players there than it ever has been. It's more difficult now to talk a freshman or a sophomore who's not getting a ton of minutes into sticking around when they could go get a ton of minutes and some cash in their pocket somewhere else. And I say this all the time. Put yourself in that kid. Pretend like you're that kid's parent. It would be a difficult decision to make to tell your son or daughter or whomever, you know what? You should turn down that $500,000 that it'll take at minimum 10, 12 years of whatever field you decide to go into in life, most likely to make that kind of, you should turn that down, and the playing time that might get you the opportunity to go play in the NBA, you should turn that down and just stick around and be unhappy. That ship has sailed. And until we get players under contract that makes them have to do that, that's a difficult ask, I think. And it's easy to say that stuff matters, but to actually do it when there's nothing binding you to it is a pretty difficult reality if we're being honest about it.
I think the good news in the context of KU is that I'm not sure there's going to be a whole lot of Bill Self asking and pleading for these players to come back and play again, the ones that are eligible to come back and play. I don't think there's going to have to be that, hey, we'll pay you X amount of dollars to, I think it's probably going to be more like, hey, we might even pay you X amount of dollars to leave. Like maybe go somewhere else. I think that we'll see pretty much of a complete roster turnover as possible, I think, next season for the Jayhawks. And I know that, there have been a couple of guys that have committed. One of them is extremely highly regarded in Darren Peterson, one of the top recruits in the country. And so you're going to see pretty much a complete roster shakeup, I would imagine, for KU. So I don't think that that scenario that you just lined out there, that's not going to be the reality for the Jayhawks this offseason.
No, it's not. Hopefully they at least keep Flory Badunga. And I hope some of the young players do come back that we just haven't really got a chance to see play yet, because players in Bill Self program do that all the time, where they come in and, as you know, usually it's about their sophomore season, where you're like, okay, that guy's got some. Like, now we're cooking a little bit with this player. They didn't have a chance to play. But anyway, I just wanted to get to that. Your video comments, always welcome. I want to touch quickly, Tommy, on the hockey, USA Canada. How into this have you become? Because I've kind of become into it now. Like, I didn't watch the first game as it was happening. I, of course, caught up with it after the chaos of the opening. And then later in the week, we've learned why there was chaos in the opening and the American players didn't like getting booed during the anthem and all that stuff. And now I'm like, hell yeah. Like, let's go. Like, let's fire this up a little bit. Like, are you doing your duty as an American patriot if you don't want to go kick Canada's tail in this game that you probably wouldn't have paid attention to otherwise?
Yeah, I'm only paying attention to the pomp and circumstance surrounding it and all of the fights and the fact that the Canadian fans are booing during the American national anthem and, like, all of that. That's about all I'm paying attention to. I'm not actually watching the games. I haven't watched a minute of it. But, yeah, of course, I'm following the fact that you've got these – American hockey players that they're like, we're going to go out there and it's an exhibition game, but we're going to just completely lay out Canada. For that reason, I've kept touch on, in touch on what's actually going on, but I haven't really been watching a whole lot of it.
I love it. I love national competitions like this. I get fired up for them. I love the Olympics. I love the World Cup. I love the World Baseball Classic. I love all of it. Can't get enough of it. Am I mad at Canada for, you know, making us out to be the heel, the bad guy? No, I totally get it. It's been a rough couple of months for Canada in the news. Like, I get it. I get why they'd do it. But that doesn't mean I have to like it. And that doesn't mean I can't get fired up over it and you know, want USA to get in there and do a little dirty work here tonight. So I think it's fun. I think it's awesome. And I think it's an interesting concept that could be, we get it in a World Baseball Classic, right? And we get it in like the Olympics and these things. But like, if you're the NBA and you're watching this, why don't you just make the All-Star game like USA versus international players and just totally feed into like why the US players are better and why international players think we're so, like, you could feed into that and have a lot of fun with it. And I wonder like what this will open the door to. Like, it's so funny too how this happens. I don't know that anybody would have really, outside of hockey fans, paid a whole lot of attention to this event. This, what do they call it? The four final, I don't even know what they call it.
The four nations.
Four nations. Yeah. The four nations. Nobody would have cared. And now everybody cares. Everybody cares about this. I'm telling you, even more than the struggles of KU or anything else, I don't think I've had more people send me funny videos, messages, whatever, than I have about this in the last 2 weeks. And I don't think it's particularly close. It has captured our attention. It has gone viral. It has done whatever you, that thing you want to talk about is. And I'm here for all of it. I love it. I think it's totally fun.
Yeah, you've got, it was interesting to kind of compare and contrast over the weekend when you had the NBA All-Star game that was widely panned and widely criticized because there was no action. I mean, it's like the Pro Bowl. It like nobody did anything, and there was all of this crap that surrounded the actual game. You contrast that with this Four Nations deal, and you've got the USA and Canada brawling and battling in an exhibition game. Same way with the All-Star game with the NBA, but you've actually got players that, you know, give a damn, and they're actually going out there and battling for it. So I think that's what also heightened the interest level in the Four Nations, because you also had the NBA All-Star game last weekend. It was the first weekend without football in 6 months, and those were your options, were the Four Nations and the NBA All-Star game, and the NBA All-Star game was trash. So all it did was just put the Four Nations exhibition up on a pedestal.
And they took advantage of it. And credit to the players, because that was clearly something they, you know, they all knew was going to happen. Like, we're going to fight here, and we're going to fight a bunch. And like the Tkachuk boys, yeah, like both getting in on it. Like, it's straight out of a movie.
My
like,
favorite done hockey games, my, and remember, I worked for the Wichita Thunder, yeah, you know, for a couple of years. Yeah. So I was at a lot of hockey games for them. My favorite games, and you could always tell when it was going to happen, when right on the, you know, right when the opening puck dropped, the gloves come off. Like, nobody's even interested in playing right when the game starts. Usually it's like the third game in a 3-3, and the tensions have boiled over. You can tell it back, you know, in the bowels of the arena, in the tunnels, like the play, like things are going to erupt pretty quickly. And it's almost like you've got the guys on both teams that they just have an understanding. Like, they look at each other, they know, you know what? Yeah, we're literally, when the puck drops to start the game, don't even go after the puck. We're just going to fight.
We're going to take care of this.
Those
now
are the best. Like, my favorite by far.
I agree, and I appreciate that hockey allows it, because, like, as somebody with four brothers, at some point, you're just going to have to get it off your chest. Like, we are dumb, smelly creatures, and sometimes we just have to go, you know, bang our heads around, yep, a little bit to get it, to just get it out of our system. And then you're good. Like, you're fine. And,
my two boys are at the age now where, you know, even the youngest is almost two, and they like to wrestle. Like, they'll just wrestle each other. Yeah. And my wife is always trying to get in the middle of it. And I'm like, you got to just let them do it. Unless they're bleeding, just let them do, like, they'll work it out. It'll be fine. Just leave them alone.
Yep. And that's, yeah, we can't help it. We're born this way. All right, we'll come back. We'll talk a little more here. We got Tim Fitzgerald coming later in the hour. Don't go away. It's Sports Daily.
You gotta hear this.
Hear this.
Go ahead. I think I want to hear this.
Sports Daily is on KFH.
Welcome back in, everybody. You want to win some HTO? How about right now? We give you your opportunity to win a free iced tea, more than 26 flavors. You can do that. So this coupon will be good for any cup of iced tea. While you're in there, you should also check out the new Poppy combination drinks. They're very popular. Those just launched. People are loving it. Anyway, text to win that free iced tea right now. The keyword is tea. The short code is 20357. That's tea to 20357. You can enter once per day. Message and data rates apply. Good luck, everybody. Welcome back into Sports Daily. We got Tim Fitzgerald coming up next segment to talk a little K-State as they try and get bounced back and into things the way that they need to do. We've talked a lot of college basketball in the first hour. We may get to some more of that. Free agency, Tommy, is coming in the NFL. We talk about it all the time as it pertains to the Chiefs. The quarterback situation is always interesting. There are a lot of them, quite frankly, that will be needle movers. I've asked you this before. Like, is it more about the quarterbacks that are out there, do you think? Or is it more about the teams that could use one of these? And we're talking, you know, Aaron Rodgers, Derek Carr, Kirk Cousins potentially, Sam Darnold, like guys who've had success that could – like, is it more about which one of those guys, do you think? Or is it more about the teams that might employ their services on a short-term basis that could really move the needle in the NFL next year?
I think it's more about the teams than it is about the actual quarterbacks. I mean, it's not like you've got like really overly prime quarterbacks that are available on the market. And at the same time, you don't have an overly strong quarterback draft class this year either. So the market is the market. But I think things are inflated a little bit this offseason because it's not like you really have the pick of the litter. Like the best out of the bunch available is probably Aaron Rodgers. I guess maybe Sam Darnold is probably in the mix there a little bit too.
But I think it's not a question.
But it's not like it's an overly like exciting and like super deep free agent group or draft class. And so I think it lends more thought to the fact that this is more about the teams than it is about the actual quarterbacks.
Yeah, I think I do too, but I do think there will be a sorting of things among that group of players. I think Kirk Cousins back in year two after an Achilles, which we know is a long recovery process, could be a factor. I think Sam Darnold, you'd have to say, has the most upside if he would be able to get close to replicating what he did for 90% of a season a year ago. You know, guys like Justin Fields re-enter the conversation. Like, there's a lot of interesting stuff at that position, but it does feel, I agree with you, like we thought when Aaron Rodgers did this the first time, it was like he's going to go somewhere and be a difference maker. Now, he wasn't. Right. It didn't end up happening. Kirk Cousins is going to go somewhere and be a difference maker. Again, was not that right. Sam Darnold was, though. And Sam Darnold would have been so far down the list of players we would have thought would be able to do that. Like nobody would have gotten that right. Now, Matt Stafford, there are questions whether he'll be in L.A. It's just an interesting quarterback offseason for different reasons. It doesn't feel like any of those guys are going to go in and make that kind of difference. But I think at least one of them will somewhere, just like Sam Darnold did a year ago. I still maintain, I think it's the 49ers that are the interesting team to watch here. And I suppose the Steelers, to me, become the two most interesting because they're the two teams you feel like if they had a really good quarterback could potentially contend for a Super Bowl. Maybe the 49ers more than the Steelers just because of what's in the AFC to get there. But if I'm telling you like Aaron Rodgers to the Steelers, or let's say Sam Darnold comes in and plays at a level similar to what he played at for the Vikings, that could absolutely send the Steelers on a deep postseason run. So I like it's a lot of unknowns, but it's a lot of potential.
But do we really honestly think that Sam Darnold with the Steelers will take them further than Russell Wilson did?
Hard to say because he's not going to have Justin Jefferson. But I will say he was definitively better than Russell Wilson.
He was. But you know, Russell Wilson was better than he was in the previous years.
Russell Wilson was
the Broncos.
He was fine.
And Darnold kind of showed his true colors towards the end of the season for the Vikings. I think that, like, we've talked about it before, like, that's going to hurt his free agency prospects a little bit, at least the amount of money he could potentially get, just because he didn't play well to end the season at all for the Vikings.
I think it was Diana Rossini, who is with The Athletic now, who predicted or reported, and I'm taking this from the like secondhand Rich Eisen sort of said, but I think the thought is that Sam Darnold's going to make a lot of money. So I think there's a market for what he could do. I don't know what I would do if I was Sam Darnold. I would, you know, going somewhere on like a prove it 1 year, a big 1 year deal would be pretty appetizing. Or do you try to find the place that'll like guarantee you to be the guy for the next 3 or 4 years? That's an interesting conversation to have, because if Darnold ends up being willing to go do something for a year, I think there are going to be a lot of teams interested in him, a lot, and they would totally be willing to pay a lot on a 1 year basis for him just to try and extend it out. Like, you're talking the Jets would rehab interest, whether or not he would have interest back in them. The Steelers certainly would have interest at that point. I mean, there's a lot of teams that if I told you, and the Vikings, quite frankly, would probably be interested in that too. Like, you can get Darnold for 1 year. It might take you, you know, $50 million, but it's only for a year. I think there'd be a lot of teams that would be willing to do that.
I think so too. But again, the market in general with Darnold and just all the other free agent quarterbacks, Darnold's got the benefit of it not being there. There's not a whole lot of like better competition vying for services out there, you know, in the league. Like, you've got a lot of teams that are quarterback needy. There aren't a ton of quarterbacks that I think the majority of teams are going to be like falling head over heels with. Maybe like a short term little bridge gap type thing. But I don't think that, you know, any team is going to look at a guy like Sam Darnold and be like, man, he is the solution to our long term problems. But we don't have much of a choice. We need somebody. And so it's kind of like what he did with the Vikings a year ago. You sign him to a deal. You hope he can bridge that gap and, you know, do what he did for the most part with Minnesota. Again, it didn't end very well for him with the Vikings. The last couple of games of the season were basically unmitigated disasters for Sam Darnold. So, you know, he kind of like showed his true colors a little bit there, and we saw the Sam Darnold that we were used to over the course of his career. But there will be a team that will probably ignore that, and they will say, we don't really have a choice. We've got to go out and give him the money that probably overpay for him, because there aren't a whole lot of better options out there.
So would you rather have – let's just do it this way. Would you rather have – Sam Darnold for $50 million, or would you rather have, who do we start with here? Or would you rather have Aaron Rodgers for $20
million? That's really difficult. Probably, gosh, I don't want to say Aaron Rodgers, because, I mean, again, Aaron Rodgers is incredibly diminished. Yeah, probably the former.
Okay.
Probably the former.
Would you rather have Darnold for 40 or Derek Carr for 15?
Probably Derek Carr for 15.
I don't think people realize the kind of start Derek Carr was off to and the kind of numbers he put up in 2 years in New Orleans. In 2023, Derek Carr threw for 3,800 yards, 25 touchdowns, and 8 interceptions. In 24, before he got hurt, And 68% of his passes were completed. In 24, same completion percentage. Before he got hurt, 2,100 yards, 15 touchdowns, and 5 interceptions with a quarterback rating over 100. So I agree with you, by the way. I agree. Would you rather have, let's see, would you rather have Sam Darnold for 40 or Russell Wilson for, let's call it, 10.
I hate this game. Why are you like, you should answer these questions too.
These are the questions. these are the questions I think teams are going to have to answer. Like, if you're the Steelers, I think you have to think about it this
because
way.
Because here's the common answer that is, like, first coming to mind with every single one of these that you're asking is neither. Like, I don't really want to pick either one of them.
Oh, I don't agree with that. I think we're talking on a one-year basis. I think these are all intriguing options. If you're a good team, I'm not talking about if you're the Titans.
But I don't think that any one of these options gets your team a championship. And so I think that that's where I'm like, man, I guess I'll pick one of them. Again, it's not a...
trying to win as many games as you can.
You're right, but do we really think that any of these options that you're presenting will get any one of these teams over the hump to win a championship? Because I don't think so.
The only team that... there are two, I guess, that I would say it could would be the Vikings and the 49ers. I think the Steelers are a closely behind, maybe. I think those are probably the three teams that could, with a good quarterback season, have that sort of impact. Obviously, Stafford's that. I don't think Stafford's leaving the Rams, so I don't include him in any of this. But let me give you an even more complicated one. Would you rather have Darnold for a year and $40 million, or Brock Purdy for 5 years and $150 million?
Probably Brock Purdy.
Yeah, and it'll be more than 100. He'll make more than 30, so it'd probably be more like 200.
I don't understand all of a sudden the Niners, you know, allegedly or whatever, like souring on Brock Purdy. Like, and maybe that's not accurate, but that certainly seems to be the discourse. You know, that they're potentially maybe not wanting to pay him or bring. I don't know. I don't understand that. I mean, he took him to a Super Bowl, so I don't get that hate.
Well, because they face the same issue that the Cowboys have faced two times now with Dak Prescott. He's a good quarterback. He's a really good quarterback. Is there any path to a... Brock Purdy wasn't that good last year. 20 touchdowns, 12 interceptions on a team that was absolutely loaded. He was very good, though, the year before. Very, very good. And in 22, when he played, the end of the season was very good. The question and the problem they now face is, are you going to tie your financial flexibility for the next 4 or 5 years to him? Is he that good? It's the same decision the Cowboys faced with Dak Prescott. They've faced it twice now with Dak Prescott. And it's a really interesting question. It's the same thing the Jags faced with Trevor Lawrence. It's the same thing, like, are any of these guys good enough in their current situation to take their teams to a Super Bowl? No, Jaguars aren't going to the Super Bowl. So, I mean, we see it all the time. So then it becomes, okay, like sometimes it's obvious, right? With Mahomes, it's obvious. With Burrow, it's obvious. With Josh Allen, it's obvious. With Lamar Jackson, it didn't work out that way, but it should have been obvious. Sometimes it's obvious and sometimes it's not. In Brock Purdy, it's not. Brock Purdy's not going to take a short deal. He's not going to take the same kind of deal Sam Darnold's going to take. Why would he? So you have, if you're the 49ers, this team who's absolutely, depending on what they do at quarterback, a Super Bowl contender next year. What do you do? What's the best path? I agree with you. I think it's probably Purdy, but I don't know that that's the best path for the next 3 or 4 years.
Why not? Like, why wouldn't that be the best path 3 to 4 years from now?
Because I think he showed us last year he's not a sure thing. That's why. That's all it is. Like, I don't think he's a sure thing.
He also took him to a championship 2 years ago.
I get it.
Right?
I get it.
And so it's very easy.
So did Jimmy Garoppolo.
You're right. I think it's very easy for teams to, you know, play that "what have you done for me lately" game, and I get it. I get it to an extent, but man, like, what's a better option out there right now for you than signing Brock Purdy long term? Because nothing's a sure thing. Even if Brock Purdy's not a sure thing, nothing else is a sure thing, and the grass isn't always greener on the other side.
No, it's not always greener, but it only costs you money for 1 year. Is the thing?
Like, but then you have to go back and do it again. You have to go back and figure it out again.
No, I get it. I totally get it. But they did it again. Like, they did it with Brock Purdy after they did it with Jimmy Garoppolo. And so
it's a dangerous game to play.
It is, but you also, so is paying a quarterback that you know isn't good enough to be paid that way. Would you, like, look at what the Cowboys are going to deal with now with Dak Prescott after that second.
But we can't compare Brock Purdy to Dak Prescott because Brock Purdy took the Niners to a championship. Like,
you can compare what they meant to their team to what Dak was doing for the Cowboys early in his career. You absolutely can. The 49ers are a better team than the Cowboys were in those years, but Brock Purdy definitively is not better than what Dak Prescott was 4 years into his career. He's not. I mean, he's about the same, honestly. They're very similar. So, like, I think it's just, it's interesting. I would also do Purdy. Like, if it was me, I would hope like hell I could do it for not resetting the quarterback market, because that might be what he asks for. And I don't think I'd do that if I were the 49ers. I don't think I'm resetting the market with him, which may be what it takes. And so at that point, it's like, okay, if that's not going to, and this is back to the original point of this conversation, if that's not what we're going to do, then of all of these other guys we're talking about, which one's your favorite? And that's what I think is the fun game of this offseason. If it's not Purdy for that team especially, then which one do you want? And I don't know the answer to that. I don't know if I wouldn't take Carr on it. And I know people will want to jump through their screen and strangle me for saying that. But what he's done is not different than what Brock Purdy's done. Like, they're similar. Like, he can manage a great offense. And so
I think it depends upon what the short-term and long-term strategy is for that particular team. Are they okay with a one-year Band-Aid because they've got a plan in the draft, or they can look in 2 years and see who the free agent quarterbacks are and they feel like they've got the cap situation to go out and make a major run at whoever. I don't know who it is, but like I think that plays a large part in it as well.
Sure.
If you feel like you've got a pretty secure and set long-term plan and you need a one-year guy, and then you're going to go and reset everything, or maybe you feel like your window is closing, and that may be a little bit with the Niners. We know the injuries that those guys have faced that are the skill position guys, and it, you know, Debo's probably out, and you know, all these different things. Is their window closing? So is it time for a reset? And I do think that can be part of it too. Like, okay, we have 1 year left in this window, and then we're going to have to probably reset other places on the team too. And what we don't want to do is we don't want to be saddled with Brock Purdy while we're rebuilding everything else. We would just like to have a fresh restart entirely. Well, then, yeah, maybe at that point you walk away from Brock Purdy and you bring in somebody for a year, as long as you've got a pretty set plan on what you want to do in the long-term future.
Yeah, and I do think their window's closing, by the way. Debo wants a trade. Christian McCaffrey's getting older. Like, their window is – it's still very open and very much could win a Super Bowl. But I don't think their long-term future is the same as the Chiefs, for instance. Like, I don't think their longevity will stretch out quite as far as a team like the Chiefs or the Bills or the Ravens, some teams like that. And largely it's because those teams all have quarterbacks that you're good with for a long time. And the Niners don't. I mean, maybe people are that good with Brock Purdy. I love Brock Purdy. I love his story. I love that he played at Iowa State. Love that he was the last pick. Not sure that I think he's that dude yet. But it's not my decision that I've got to make, thankfully. And if you're a fan of a team that doesn't have to make it, just be thankful, right? The greatest gift in sports is a good quarterback. I'm telling you, like, to not have to, like, the no doubt about it, quarterbacks are such a gift to a sports fan. We are happy to be joined by Tim Fitzgerald, GoPowerCat.com, our K-State insider. Fitz, I propose we all go find a groundhog today and punt it. How's the weather up in Manhattan?
Let's put it this way. I texted you, I'm doing audio only because I'm not getting out of bed all day. I'm going to just hide here under the sheets with two dogs and be happy. It's currently negative 10.
Negative 10. We're at, we're about negative 8, I think. Record lows today. Hope everybody's out there staying warm. To those of you out working through it, we appreciate having you here with us. We've got, you know, some college hoops back here tonight for us at Wichita State. K-State up there, though, you got to wait a minute, right? It's been a long week to sit and think about the disappointment in Utah. A lot different in the disappointment than, you know, the disappointment we saw early in the season, but two losses nonetheless. It's an interesting dynamic now, Fitz. There are about 9 Big 12 teams who will, but in my opinion, compete for one, maybe two at-large spots, and their resumes are all very similar. I think the Big 12, after the top and obvious 5, will get, you know, probably 2 more, and there are seriously 9 of the other 11 teams in the league that could make a case over the next couple of weeks to have them.
That's incredible. It's amazing the parity in this conference that a team like Utah, which I don't know if it's in year nine.
They for sure are.
Yeah. Can just decimate both K-State and KU. Like BYU's pretty good. We knew that. Utah's playing some pretty good basketball all of a sudden. Unfortunately for them, they're out of Kansas schools. They'll have to find their own way beyond that. But yeah, it's incredible how the ebbs and flows of this conference. And unfortunately for K-State fans, the ebb has returned for Kansas State basketball.
But it's not the same. It's not the same as it was. Like that for me, like the two losses in Utah, for instance, are nothing like the loss to Oklahoma State and Houston in back-to-back games, right? Like it's a totally different, it's unfortunate that it took so long to get there, but it shouldn't be as detrimental as it was, but it is what it is. Now they get a chance. They'll, probably be favored, I think, in four of their next five, maybe not at Cincinnati, but they'll probably be favored in four of those five. And then they close with Iowa State at home. I would say that if they win all of those in a couple of games in the tournament, I actually think they'd get in. But even if it is just tournament or bust, don't you feel a whole lot better about their chances to do that? K-State could beat anybody in a Big 12 tournament environment.
They could. It is interesting that this year's Big 12 tournament is going to be very important for about half the conference. And you're right. My new motto is let's see them win the next four, and then we can talk about this, because they are winnable games and they're capable of that. But they were also capable of winning the two in Utah, and they didn't get it done. Now UCF appears to be falling apart. Colorado has actually beaten UCF in the last week or two. So there's some real opportunity here. You're right. Cincinnati's the best of the bunch, and it all starts Sunday with Arizona State, as this Monday to Sunday break really kind of adds up for Kansas State. But you know what? Maybe they needed the time to reflect on how they played so well and then stopped and what they need to do to get back to it.
I like the amount of time off. Honestly,
I think so too.
I think it's a good break. That game against Utah, it's felt like a lifetime ago, but that man, to get dominated down low like they did, which we could kind of see coming a little bit, but to still be there, and you're a Doug McDaniel missed layup and Coleman Hawkins mental error away from being right there. It's unfortunate that those two guys made those two mistakes right there at the end, but otherwise I thought it was a pretty inspired performance against Utah, because that's a bad matchup for K-State stylistically, a big physical team like that.
Well, yeah, I mean, that is tough. People said, David Gasson didn't have a very good triple. He went up against some big dudes, some true bigs, which have always given problems. So you're right. K-State has a better sense of identity even when they don't play to it. And, they got back to it late in that game and just didn't make some plays. I have no explanation for the Coleman Hawkins.
Yeah, it's a mistake. It was just it was a mental mistake. I don't think he needs any excuses. Like, he screwed up. McDaniel screwed up before that by missing the layup to begin with. So they both screwed up. But that's going to happen. And it's just unfortunate that it cost them as much as it potentially cost them. I hate that it did, because I thought they had a really good effort. What do you know? Speaking of Coleman Hawkins, man, he can barely get up and down the floor. Is he okay?
Right. We don't know what's going on with him. And I actually think K-State was in that game because he got into foul trouble and they had to take him off the court.
Because he's hurt.
Well, I don't. If he's that hurt, get him off the court, because
he looks like it.
He was not. And it went beyond physical, as you mentioned. There wasn't full mental engagement in this game either. He had a little flurry towards the end, and then he made a boneheaded mistake that all of us who grew up playing basketball, learned in junior high. It's hard to explain. So, yeah, if it's physical, hopefully he can get healed up this week. Hopefully it's enough time to get him rested up. But that looked as much mental as anything to me.
All right, Fitz, I want to ask you, Tim Fitzgerald, gopowercat.com. I think you love this you know, this state, what it provides as much as anybody else. I know you're a K-State guy, but I know you also appreciate what Kansas has been able to do under Bill Self for 25 years as much as anybody else does. It's so wild to me that the low point of a 25-year run, with the exception of like early tournament exits, is maybe a 20-win season. Isn't that crazy to think about, first of all? Like, it's almost put this entire thing into perspective that the reaction to this is as visceral as it is. Not that it shouldn't be, but like, man, literally every team in the country, every single one of them, would be happy to have a 25-year run where your worst year was 20 wins and a 7 seed.
Yeah. Yes. But, you know, you get acclimated to your weather, and their weather has been sunny in 75 for a long time because he is a brilliant coach. And I'm going to be honest here. I just think the talent is getting dispersed differently across college basketball now with NIL, and kids have greater options because now it is actual money being handed out. So I think the rules are going to come back a little bit in KU's favor when NIL moves in-house. But in part of this, I think the rest of the Big 12 is looking at Kansas basketball fans, and they're essentially complaining because their Bentley was repossessed. And the rest of us are out here in Subarus and, you know, Kias. And we're like, okay, that's great. I'm sorry this horrible thing happened to you. Now you get to go to the NCAA tournament as punishment.
No, nobody, you know, inside that program is asking for sympathy. This is one where I don't think it's symptomatic of the changes in college basketball. Here's what I think. I think we all overvalued their key three players that they brought back. I think the team has the same issues it had a year ago because the players are largely the same. And while we all looked at the other players to say, oh, if they can just get better players around those three, they're going to be great. The reality is those three just don't fit together very well. And so now we've had to see that over a couple of years, that because that's a constant here. And now there's a psychological issue, which is a totally separate issue. But I think X's and O's wise, I just don't think those three are the right fit. And they've had them for 2 years. And you've seen 2 years of sort of struggle. Remy Martin helped them win a national championship and was a transfer player. Right. He was the prize transfer player that year. So I guess I'm not ready to look at this holistically and say, Bill Self's not going to be able to survive in the new era of college basketball. I just don't believe that.
Well, I think he's going to get acclimated, but also we have to calculate in NIL signings have a rate of failure that is a little bit surprising. And I think KU is going through that. I think they brought in some guys that haven't been nearly as productive as they hoped. And, you know, I noticed this when K-State played KU in Manhattan. I don't know why I needed to see it in person to really let this soak in, but they don't have that dude that scares you. They don't. Hunter Dickinson's a load. The other guys are really good, but they don't have that outside shooter or that playmaker or that elite NBA talent on the wing that just scares the daylights out of you. They just don't have the weapons that they have. And whether that's NIL driven or something else, I'm not sure, but it is certainly apparent when that team lines up on the court. I think we saw it this weekend. KU just doesn't scare people right now. And that used to be part of their aura. They just scared you by coming on the court because they were so athletic and they could make so many plays. This team ain't scaring anybody right now.
No, not right now, and they should, and maybe they get back to it. What do you think the chances are? That this is still a team that beat Duke, it's a team that beat Michigan State, it's a team that beat Iowa State by 20.
Yeah.
What do you think the chances are Self can work a little magic here
before
the end of the season?
I've known this. I'm never going to write off Bill Self. You know, maybe he'll get down towards the end and just hone in his attention on the guys that are – really bought in. I'm not sure what's going on, but when you have a bunch of guys in your locker room who are probably unhappy about not playing, it gets a little difficult to be the head coach.
Back to the Cats. Yep. Arizona State, UCF, Colorado, Cincinnati, home against Iowa State. Fill in the blank. K-State wins blank of the next five?
I'm going to go with three. Okay. And you need five.
For sure.
You need five. Look, I would really respect what Kansas State did at Iowa State, but they're going to be coming in here with their hair on fire at the last game of the season. I mean, it's going to be extremely difficult to win that game, but K-State's capable of it. We've seen it. And also, they've really struggled winning on the road. So I think they might get one of these road games but lose the other. And I think this is a really winnable stretch here for K-State over the next four until they play Iowa State. Get these four, and then let's talk about the NCAA tournament. Until then, you got work to do.
Well, and we can end with this, Fitz. Let's say they don't win all five, and it becomes a win the Big 12 tournament or bust. Then the next question becomes, not are they lucky enough to do that? Are they good enough, actually good enough to go win something like the Big 12 tournament? I actually think they are.
Yeah, it comes down to matchups and how the bracket falls.
Yeah.
I think NC State last year put everything on the table for teams like Kansas State.
Yeah, that's a good
one.
It's
all right there.
That's a good one.
You're not dead yet. I mean, you got the tournament, and then you can play your way through the bracket, and I'll be darned, it is possible to get to the Final Four with a resume like Kansas State. It was unbelievable, but it happened. So let's see, you know, what some of these teams have. There's a lot of Big 12 teams in a similar predicament.
I don't think there's anybody that doesn't think K-State's built. I think everybody thinks they could make an NCAA tournament run if they could just get there the way they're built, the way they can, you know, fill it up from three at times and all those things. Fitz, GoPowerCat.com has us all covered. Go find the work there. Go find Fitz on X at Life of Fitz. We appreciate it. Stay warm today. Stay hibernating.
Okay. Yep, I'm going to add a blanket just for my own personal safety.
Have to do it. To do it. There goes Tim Fitzgerald. That'll do it for a Thursday. We get the Shockers tonight. Let's see if they can get something done here, Tommy. I'm excited about Shocker basketball again. Didn't take much for me. I think fans probably feel the same way. It took a couple of good weeks of basketball, and here we are.
Yeah, it's a tough stretch coming up for the Shockers. Of course, they're, you know, continuing with teams that are above them in the conference standings. They've got to get another one on the road in Boca Raton. So we'll see how it goes tonight.
Del Boca Vista.
I love it.
For your Seinfeld fans out there. All right, that coverage begins at 7 o'clock. It's a late start out there on the East Coast. You'll hear it on KYN. You get Butler basketball on KFH at 7:15. And how about a little late-night Shocker baseball out in Hawaii at 10:15? How about that? Stay tuned for it all. We'll be back tomorrow to break it all down. See you then.